At Lebatard Show on Twitter. Final poll question today, guys. Are you a special kind of degenerate if you are betting presidential props? 85% of the audience is judging me. They said yes.
So I want to talk to the audience because the audience here in the shadows has, over the last 8 months, we've shared something intimate with you and weird during what is the crisis of our lifetimes. We will all remember 2020 a certain way for being the weirdest year of our life, no matter your generation, I think, given that, you know, the generations of world wars that we've had don't have a whole lot of people anymore alive. And so as we experience this together, there have been a number of weird things that end up happening all over the place, and they've affected the show. And if you've specifically been with us through the last 8 or 9 months of hardship, you have seen where the show was being done from our kitchens to gradually making its way over to the studio, to Stu Gatz being in studio with me. And you've seen more and more and closer of a version of our show when it's at its most cohesive and when it's at its best. But we've got all sorts of problems around here every single day that make appearances in the Zoom call and make chemistry difficult. But I honestly thought that the first 2 hours that we did today is the closest to normal our show has felt since this whole thing started. On today, really? Of all days, yeah. We're all exhausted because of the stress and the tension of last night.
It's the magic of 90s baseball. I'm telling you, it pulls us to a happy place every single time.
I don't understand. I love first that we started there, okay? I love the idea. As many of you have been sleepless, and many of you have been tired and anxiety-ridden.
Carney Lansford.
Little too good. A little too good as a professional.
You know what? You're right. You are right.
I feel like I'm pretty decent at this game. I feel like it's my wheelhouse. I've spent Stu Gatz during the breaks because he can't shut up. He just keeps spitting them at me, and I keep telling him, Stu Gatz, those are all leadoff hitters. You keep mistaking professional hitters with leadoff hitters.
You win in a World Series with 8 Carney Lansfords, Mike?
Yeah, too good. He's not the tipping point, though. We need to find the tipping point.
Billy, we'll do that tomorrow. Billy, are there many people who are calling us idiots and saying, how do you guys not know that each finger has 3 knuckles in it? Are we getting made fun of for staring at our hands in the first segment?
Probably. I mean, people make fun of us for everything. I was looking up a bunch of different hand diagrams and thought about getting on a hand doctor to get an answer once and for all. And then I realized that's probably a giant waste of that hand doctor's time. But I saw different diagrams that had different names for things.
Dan, I've got a couple knuckles for everybody right here for the people making fun of us.
Wow. Whoa! Oh, my God. Whoa.
Was that 6 or 4 knuckles? I don't know.
Hold on.
Those are a couple of middle fingers. Well, Tony, it's funny that you should chime in here because this is a question better posed here in this segment of the show. But Mike Ryan believes that you were living dangerously and living dangerously on purpose when you pronounced fa. I don't think you did that on purpose. Mike Ryan thinks you were living that close to the edge where you thought it a good idea to come that close to pronouncing a word that we're not allowed to pronounce around here. The only one that really gets bleeped on even this, the post game show.
Yeah, I was living close because I knew once I saw the game being played, you know, Bo Bichette eating Vietnamese food, it's a common, you know, misnomer that people pronounce pho instead of pho.
That's the actual
pronunciation of it. So I had it in my mind. Pho.
The Mr. Nomer. So, that's what you were going.
So I went up, and you know what? I stood in the limelight, naked, in front of everybody for you guys to see, and for me to say "fa."
Well, I appreciate
that's
the confidence.
Brave. That's yeah. brave. Yeah. Brave on a day like today when people got their eye on our show to make sure that I don't do anything.
Yeah, you're out here making jokes like
Tone,
that.
Tone, like, that's brave of you. Like, honestly.
I'm standing in the breach for you, Dan.
That's dangerous. I don't think it was worth the payoff where you're even making me fumble around it because I wanted to say to Mike, at one point, I was looking for the opening set to say to Mike, fa you, Mike, fa you. And out, but he was too rattled and scattered and scared because of what you had done, and he was looking at me through gritted teeth.
Yeah, your confidence really just scared everybody away from the table.
I wanted to double up on it, though, and he crushed me, and it wasn't him that crushed me. It was the fear on your face.
Yeah, I mean, naturally, I'm a little anxious today, Dan. I hope you can understand.
Rance Mullenix.
That's a pretty good one.
I know it is.
Rance Mullenix, but I think he was a starter. Did he play? The thing that Tim brought around here that I thought was actually the best point for what you need with a professional hitter that was lost on us was just plays all over the place because he's not actually that valuable. Not all over the field, though that too in some cases, but plays for multiple teams. I do think that helps you understand a little bit better. Not, it doesn't apply to everyone because Ricky Henderson played for like 7 or 8 or 9
right.
9 teams, but I thought that that was a distinction. Are you guys with Tim Kirkchian? Billy, first of all, we've got a seed to Tim Kirkchian. He has ordained it, has been announced. The most professional hitter in the pukey cliche way, he says, is Matt Stairs. Can you take that away from him?
No, that's not a good suggestion. There's no Ross Gloat. Kenny Lofton played for a million teams, but he was too good, right? Kenny
too
Lofton
good.
Was not a professional. He was more scrappy than a professional hitter, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, wasn't he an all-star?
You can be scrappy and be an all-star.
If I had to guess, Kenny Lofton made like 6 or 7 all-star games.
Yeah, he made a bunch. Yeah.
I think you're right, because Pedroia won MVP being scrappy.
Yep.
Let's think about this for a second. You can be scrappy and an MVP, but you can't be an MVP and be a professional hitter. Can you be a professional hitter if you're scrappy? Because it doesn't feel like these guys, Lenny Harris, scrappy. Is that what we're talking about?
Glenn Hubbard?
No, you got to get a good amount of infield hits if you want to be scrappy.
Now you say that though, but that's a leadoff hitter. This is the same.
A lot of leadoff hitters are scrappy, Dan.
This is the same thing that Stugatz was doing, though. Fair enough, Chris. But he was saying Juan Pierre, professional hitter. And I'm like, no, that's just a leadoff man. And then eventually he did what Stugatz does, which is a wonderful move of his and real diffuser. He's like, you're right, Dan. And it just ends right there because he doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, defeated.
How old do you think we sound to our audience?
Oh, I hope super old. Glenn Hubbard is what he just threw at us?
It's a doozy. A
brave second baseman from 1986?
Here's how we get younger, guys. I was looking up pictures of Rusty Staub. Yeah. To me, he looks kind of like a redheaded Don Rickles.
See?
I wouldn't be wearing that with pride.
See what?
What do you mean, see? What do you mean, see? You think
validated?
You think redheaded Don Rickles is a compliment? How did you arrive at redheaded Don Rickles is a compliment?
I tweeted out a picture of Rusty Staub. I think he looks dashing.
Now, Billy has written in the chat here, and you guys help me out here because I'm about to make a private conversation public. Billy wrote, I had a bad stomach ache today and decided for some reason to eat a whole bag of popcorn the last 2 segments. Bad choice. And then Chris chimes in with, I couldn't have been more checked out today.
I wrote that when you said this is like the best show we've ever done. And I was just like, I don't remember any of it. I've just been watching the news the whole show.
John King has woken up from his nap.
Oh, he got back at 11. I've been watching him since 11.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, one thing that he needs to work on, the suit game.
No.
Because he always leans forward, but he always puts his hand over his jacket. Let's get a better jacket there,
Dan. I think he has the most difficult job in the media and does it as well as anyone could possibly do.
He was great last night.
Seriously.
He was great, informed, knowledgeable. He seemed to have a real expertise over what it is that he was doing. And did it in a way that couldn't bother much of anybody, really. Like, it wasn't, it's so hard to find in politics these days. Like, it just was largely factual and kept putting in the diluters, even though it was boring at every turn, explaining to people why he wasn't being partisan. And he clearly wasn't being partisan.
Oh, I think like 12 years ago, he made a total star turn and was given a show, John King USA, just based on his ability to do that so well.
What do we do with Mike Lieberthal?
He wanted to punch Wolf Blitzer, right? Like, it seemed like he wanted to hit Wolf Blitzer, who kept asking him questions and interrupting him while he was answering the question he asked with another question.
Wolf does get a little handsy with the question sometimes.
Unreal patience. unreal patience. And I like Wolf Blitzer because of his amazing cameo in Mission Impossible Fallout, which features the two best face reveals in the franchise within one film. Wolf Blitzer probably number two to the one that I don't want to spoil later.
Wait a minute, but that one was shocking. That one was shocking. I would have loved, let me explain to you, because he is merely, Mike, I want you to imagine this, okay, what I'm about to say. And imagine Stugat or me or whomever you want to imagine. But whatever Wolf Blitzer is in his world, he's just a television person, which means at some point this could have arrived at the desk of someone like Stugat or me. Yeah. I want you to imagine Wolf Blitzer getting that script and that request. Hey, you are going to be someone whose face we tear off, and secretly underneath, you're going to find the star of our movie.
Simon Pegg.
Or one of the stars of our movie, but a franchise movie.
Remember how great Ethan sold it, too, because he was like kicking the shit. Get him to read it.
It is shocking. It's shocking that Wolf Blitzer turned into not Wolf Blitzer. And I want you to imagine how happy he was getting that script and agreeing to that role.
I am happy with the humanity that Ethan Hunt displays because they articulate it quite well. You want the agent that cares about that one life, right? But the entire movie is because he wasn't willing to let Ving Rhames die, right? He loses the nuke because he wants to protect that one life. And then he spends an entire movie going to multiple countries trying to make up for that mistake. And he takes it to the wire, my friends. I mean, we didn't have much time there.
For some reason, my wife, we're watching the election in bed last night, and she's imagining me having John King's responsibilities. And for some of that, we both just started laughing because, oh my God, would I F that thing up?
Yeah, we would all be terrible at that. It's really hard. It requires you to be informed.
Tony Womack.
Probably too good.
Leadoff hitter.
I know, but, I mean, wasn't he an all-star?
I'm going to end the game. Darren Erstadt.
That's strong.
Thank you.
I'll take it.
I mean.
Yeah, I'll take it.
I want to go back to the Mission Impossible franchise, though, and I want to understand when you say cutting it close. I mean, isn't that what the entire – you said they took it right down to the wire. I thought that was the whole thing since the television series in the 60s is that you cut the wire 4 seconds before – you're taking it right down to the wire.
Well, it wasn't just that. All right, so in the Alps, they have like – they have the nuclear bomb that they're trying to disarm. So they're in a race against the clock then. We haven't heard back from Ethan yet. Let's just cut it at the very last second and hope Ethan handled his business as he's hanging off a mountain's edge. So it was a rare time in that film, in that franchise, really, where multiple places were racing against the clock to save humanity. However, he was indeed disavowed by the government in that film, making it, par for the franchise. There has only been one film in the entire Mission Impossible franchise in which Ethan wasn't disavowed by his own government.
Billy, I know it's a busy time for him, but can we get Wolf Blitzer at some point in the future? At some point in the future, just to ask him Mission Impossible questions. We've got to get him. No, we got to put him down. You guys are smiling because you don't think we can get him, or... We've got not right now. It's going to be hard to get him now, understandably. It's hard to get Lenny Shoulders, who fell in a sinkhole on a pile of rats right now.
Old Lenny Shoulders, as you like to call him. You know what? He's like 30-something years old, but I think when a guy is named Lenny Shoulders, despite his age, even as a baby, you refer to him as Old Lenny Shoulders.
Well, Lenny Shoulders absolutely is part of the Stugat's Mafia movie. Like, whatever Mafia movie you imagine Stugat's as the centerpiece of, like, he's got a buddy named Lenny Two Time Shoulders, for sure.
Placido Polanco.
You think there was a negotiation with Wolf, like he was their first choice, or there was a negotiation with, like, an Anderson Cooper that fell through because he wanted too many, like, Twizzlers or something?
It's a good question. What did Wolf Blitzer? I want to ask Wolf Blitzer. That's why you got to get him.
I almost took Placido Polanco out with a drive.
What?
I was paired. Chris Whittingham and I went to play golf at Miccosukee, and we were paired with Placido Polanco. And I'm not very good. I'm still learning. I don't play often enough to be good. And
you hit the greatest shot I've ever seen in golf history.
Yeah, but I hit this shot, and I had to yell hot corner to him. He had to dive out of the way. We parted ways midway through.